Chapter 97. Her own agitation. I, if you despair of me, I shall despair. You're saying that I should not go on being selfish, and ignorant has been some strength to me. If you say you wish you had not meddled, that means you despair of me and forsake me. And then you will decide for me, that I shall not be good. It is you who will decide, because you might have made me different by keeping as near to me as you could, and believing in me. As he had not been looking at him as she spoke, but at the handle of the fan which she held closed. With the last words she rose and left him, returning to her former place, which had been left vacant, while everyone was settling into quietude in expectation of Mira's voice, which presently, with that wonderful, searching quality of subdued song in which the melody seems simply an effect of the emotion, gave forth, per pita non dermi adio. In Deronda's ear the strain was for the moment a continuance of Gwendolyn's pleading, a painful urging of something vague and difficult, irreconcilable with pressing conditions, and yet cruel to resist. However strange the mixture in her of a resolute pride, and a precocious air of knowing the world, with a precipitate, guileless indiscretion, he was quite sure now that the mixture existed. Sir Hugo's hints had made him alive to dangers that his own disposition might have neglected, but that Gwendolyn's reliance on him was unvisited by any dream of his being a man who could misinterpret her was as manifest as morning, and made an appeal which wrestled with his sense of present dangers, and with his foreboding of a growing incompatible claim on him in her mind. There was a foreshadowing of some painful collision. On the one side the grasp of Mordecai's dying hand on him, with all the ideals and prospects it aroused. On the other the fair creature in silk and gems, with her hidden wound and her self-dread, making a trustful effort to lean and find herself sustained. It was as if he had a vision of himself besought with outstretched arms and cries, while he was caught by the waves, and compelled to mount the vessel bound for a far-off coast. That was the strain of excited feeling in him that went along with the notes of Mira's song, but when it ceased he moved from his seat with the reflection that he had been falling into an exaggeration of his own importance, and a ridiculous readiness to accept Gwendolyn's view of himself, as if he could really have any decisive power over her. "What an enviable fellow you are," said Hans to him, sitting on a sofa with that young duchess, and having an interesting quarrel with her. "Quarrel with her?" repeated Deronda, rather uncomfortably. "Oh, about theology, of course. Nothing personal. But she told you what you ought to think, and then left you with a grand air which was admirable. Is she an antinomian? If so, tell her I am an antinomian painter, and introduce me. I should like to paint her and her husband. He has the sort of handsome physique that the Duke ought to have in Lucrezia Borgia, if it could go with a fine baritone, which it can't." Deronda devoutly hoped that Hans's account of the impression his dialogue with Gwendolyn had made on a distant beholder was no more than a bit of fantastic representation, such as was common with him. And Gwendolyn was not without her afterthoughts, that her husband's eyes might have been on her, extracting something to reprove some offense against her dignity as his wife, her consciousness telling her that she had not kept up the perfect air of equability in public which was her own ideal. But Grandcourt made no observation on her behavior. All he said as they were driving home was, "Lush will dine with us among the other people tomorrow. You will treat him civilly." Gwendolyn's heart began to beat violently. The words that she wanted to utter, as one wants to return a blow, were, "Why, you are breaking your promise to me, the first promise you made me." But she dared not utter them. She was as frightened at a quarrel, as he had foreseen, that it would end with throttling fingers on her neck. After a pause, she said in the tone rather of defeat than resentment, "I thought you did not intend him to frequent the house again. I want him just now. He is useful to me, and he must be treated civilly." Silence. There may come a moment when even an excellent husband who has dropped smoking under more or less of a pledge during courtship, for the first time will introduce his cigar smoke between himself and his wife, with the tacit understanding that she will have to put up with it. Mr. Lush was, so to speak, a very large cigar. If these are the sort of lover's vows at which Jove laughs, he must have a merry time of it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.